what you're doing. Later on, switch on the TV. They give me a news, they give half truths to me. They give us wives, they feed us lies.
Uncensored Radio Free America.
Rick Adams is on.
Yes, he is. Hello, ladies and gentlemen. Rick Adams with you right up until the top of the next hour, right? Or the bottom or whatever. Well, we're here for 2 hours, weeknights, from 8 o'clock to 10 Central, 9 to 11 Eastern, which I'm on. And we are now in New England, preparing for a snowstorm. So, anyway, what else is new, right? Not even winter yet, and we are dealing with snow. So, that's what we welcome. We welcome it anyway. We're not going to do anything about it. The good Lord has sent it, and the good Lord shall take it away. Now, tonight we are awaiting the opportunity to speak to a regular on this program. His name, of course, is Eustace Mullins, and we're waiting to make contact. Hopefully we will, but we got him. Good, good, because sometimes it's a difficult process to reach him, as you know, with his contention that his phone calls are being relayed and they're being sent to a nice little front group in New York. You know, this man is highly targeted, highly envied and frightened by many because... Well, he's up there around 83 now, and he lived through much of the era from the 30s on when things were happening to this country, when the international bankster gangsters were doing their nefarious things, like creating wars, depression, recession, then, quote, recovery, and so on and so forth. They were doing all these nasty things to us, and here was Eustace Mullins writing about it and talking about it, and he wound up in big trouble for that. He'll tell you what what happened to him when we start the program after the break. But Eustace is a patriot. He is an Americanist. He is definitely an advocate for neutrality. He is an advocate for gold, honest money. And I guess if you're for all those things, you're going to have some pretty powerful enemies. And they just happen to run the United States government as well as governments of the world. So stay tuned, jump aboard, I'll give you the number now. Eustace will be here for about 90 minutes, and then we'll have Jeff Bennett on the last half hour because we have some very important and exciting news that needs to be told. So whatever you do, don't miss the last part of the program as well and our appeal for the pledge drive for rbnlive.com. Most important, you pay attention. This is a very pivotal month that we're in, a very key month. And so you have to join with us so we can make it. Because otherwise, it will disappear. Make no mistake about that. We will, and I will, disappear from the network because of funding. Very important that we expand. And now we're on at night, short wave, and also satellite, the micros, and, of course, the Internet. So we want to grow and not go. Okay? Get the message? Good. Join with us, Eustace Mullins, when we come back from the break, and we will do that in just about 3 minutes. I'm Rick Adams, your radio avenger, the Paul Revere of Talk Radio. The program, Uncensored Radio Free America. Stay with me.
First step in winning the war, spreading the word. Tell your friends Rick Adams is on RBNLive.com.
And yes, we are live, and so is Eustace Mullins. Hello, Eustace.
Well, I'm alive. I'm glad to report that.
Amen, amen. The reports of your demise were a bit premature, I'm sure, right?
In fact, I did a talk show this afternoon. I unleashed my Christmas message to the American people.
Oh, you did?
Oh, yes.
What show was that that you were on?
I don't know. See, the guy from Florida came up here and did a video of me, and he went on this talk show to promote the video, and they asked me if I'd come on, too.
Uh-huh.
So I said yes, and I don't know where it is or anything.
That's interesting. Well, we got
nobody ever tells me anything.
Well, you know, that's true. I feel the same way. I'm the last to learn.
Oh,
but,
yes.
But, you know,
well,
we had...
Well, they tell my staff, but my staff never tells me anything.
We had... Is that right?
Yeah.
We had a little trouble getting you tonight. And how many times did the phone ring before you actually were able to pick up?
It didn't ring at all.
Okay, so it wasn't
someone
ringing until the fourth.
And was gassing away.
Yeah.
And I wasn't even paying attention to the time. I didn't even know what time it was. And I kept telling somebody's trying to break into the line.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what it was. It was just
exactly.
This idiot was on the phone.
So we did get through after the third or fourth.
Well, you were getting through right. You were getting right through right along. I heard every time he called me.
Good.
But you see, I didn't know what was going on, but I knew somebody was trying to break in the line. Mm-hmm. I thought somebody either trying to call him or trying to call me.
Well, you knew we had the appointment tonight, so that's the important.
Oh, I did,
thing.
But I wasn't watching the time. I didn't know it was 9 o'clock.
There you go. Time flies when you're having so much fun.
Well, my staff never alerts me. Well, Eustace, you got to get ready. It's almost 9 o'clock.
You got to get a better staff. Anyway.
Well, I'm going to get one as soon as I can find one that works the same way I do, without faith.
Yeah, that's what Moses said. He had to get a better staff, right?
Oh, yeah.
All right. Well, anyway, let me start off by once again mentioning, because we have so many new listeners and uninitiated, that a little bit about you. And in fact, I guess you were the first person ever to be fired from the Library of Congress.
The only person for political reasons.
And those reasons were?
I was fired by Senator Herbert Lehman, National Chairman of the Anti-Defamation League of the Neighborhood.
Yeah.
And so that's quite an honor. I don't know anybody else that Senator Lehman ever personally fired. And that was because of a strange coincidence. See, I was the protege of Ezra Pound, who was held at that trial for 13 and a half years in St. Elizabeth's Hospital.
Mm-hmm.
And so I had a couple of Ezra young friends. He was sending us out on various errands, and he told us that Senator Lehman was speaking at a school there on Pennsylvania Avenue, and District of Columbia Independence.
Mm-hmm.
And he suggested we go down there and talk to him a little bit. And so we did. Went down and heckled the hell out of it. And Lehman was like many inbred billionaires. He was his nervous system was a total mess. So he started getting this nervous tick in his left eye, and his left eye was jerking all over the place.
Yes.
And it was fascinating. So anyway, some of the ADL people found out who I was, and they went after the Library of Congress. That's why I was fired.
That's unusual, because a lot of people, don't understand that the ADL went after you right from the beginning, and it was after what, your first book, was it, that they...
Well, when Mullins on the Federal Reserve was the first printing, mm-hmm. 1953, mm-hmm. and as soon as that book appeared, the Anti-Defamation League, which I had never heard of at the time, they went national and complained that... they denounced the book as being virulently anti-Semitic.
And yet you hadn't mentioned anything at all about that.
Well, people read the book and they couldn't understand what they're talking about because I had never been virulent, and I still am not, and so they couldn't find anything in the book. So they were asking me, well, what's going on, Eustace? I said, I don't know. I never heard of these people.
Well, you certainly found out about
them. Every year since 1953.
Yeah, well, they, as you know, are the illegally unregistered arm of the Israeli Mossad. And, of course, that's not surprising when we know what they're up to and what they're attempting to do to America and Europe in particular. And
they are doing it, but I got some good news. This is my Christmas message to the American people. I just found it out was that in 2 months we're going to be free of Israel.
Oh,
yes, we've come to the party of the ways. And,
how's
of course,
that?
We're not doing this. The American people have not waken up at all. They still don't know what's going on. But the people in Israel have realized that this disaster in Iraq is going to start a Holocaust, so they're backing out.
There are some people making noise about it, aren't there?
Oh, there are.
In
all the
Israel.
World. Listen, in France and Germany, they're going crazy. See, we don't have any news of this country, so that's we don't know anything about what's going on.
Absolutely.
But in France and Germany, I saw they're going after them hammer and tongs. Mm-hmm. And so here, poor Bill Riley's been screaming over the Murdoch network for months that we cannot cut and run in Iraq. And it's true, we're not. We can't cut and run. But it's the Zionists that are cutting and running.
Mm-hmm. Well, George Bush just spoke before his his buddies that have tremendous influence in this government, ever have since 1921, the CFR, Council on Foreign Relations.
And,
George Bush did not get the best of receptions here.
So. Oh, no. And, you know, Paul Wolfowitz had a big article in the Washington Post today, and he had spoken at the National Press Club for $45,000. Telling him how right he was and everything.
Oh, yeah.
And it created such a hullabaloo that he had to leave by the back door. There were so many protesters there that poor Paul had to sneak out the back door, but he got his $45,000.
He took that on the way out.
Oh,
huh?
He managed to gather up all of
there
that.
There you go.
He's probably counting his homes right now.
Well, let me just read the following to you, Hustis, and then we'll take it from there, because tonight I want to go in a little bit of a different direction. I'd like to talk about the book that you were involved with, you wrote, I guess, was The Curse of Canaan, right?
Oh, yes.
And I want to talk about Canaan and the Canaanites, if we can, a little bit tonight, and talk about this whole New World Order concept. But let me read the following for you and our listeners, and then we'll stop here. In the wake of Hurricane Katrina and Rita, and with an ongoing war in Iraq that costs more than $1 billion per week, taxpayers might think Congress has better things to do with $21 billion that sends overseas. Yet that's exactly what Congress did last Friday, approving a useless and counterproductive foreign aid spending bill. Consider just a few of the ways your money will be used under the new bill. Here we go. $150 million for development in Gaza, in addition to the billions we already give the Palestinians and the Israelis every year.
$119 billion a year.
Yeah. Now, $110 million for the Middle East Partnership Initiative, ostensibly for economic development, although the recipient nations include Kuwait and Saudi Arabia. Why in the world are American taxpayers giving welfare to OPEC governments? Over $500 million for various republics in the former Soviet Union. Even as these nations spawn millionaires and even billionaires, Americans are expected to provide welfare for their poor. $95 million in new money for the UN Democracy Fund, which meddles with foreign governments but never seems to change them. $34 million for the pro-abortion United Nations Population Fund. This is George Bush now. Pro-abortion. $440 million for international population planning. $80 million for the dubious Global Environmental Facility run by the World Bank to fund anti-free market environmental projects around the world. Constitutionally, of course, none of this spending is authorized. But there also is a strong moral case to be made against the taking of money from Americans and giving it to foreign governments. And, of course, that's Howard Phillips speaking in his newsletter, and he goes on and on and on. And that's just the beginning of what this rogue government in Washington is doing to the American taxpayer. And, you know, Eustace, we did our TV program the other day, my co-host Scott Smith and I, and we were talking about this criminality and how the American public does not have an honest money system. And because we do not have an honest money system, we can never, never keep up with the devaluation and demonetization of our currency. So we are slaves, and we don't even realize it.
Oh, that's absolutely true. You know, Howard Phillips is one of our oldest friends. I used to lecture at his group quite a bit.
Yes, he's an old friend of mine, and he's a man that tried to dismantle the whole program of the Office of Economic Opportunity and Nixon administration.
Oh, in the Nixon administration, yeah. It goes way back.
And he was frustrated, Because Richard Nixon came out and admitted he was a Fabian, admitted he was a socialist and a Keynesian. And, of course, Howard Phillips was there as a conservative trying to dismantle all this garbage, and he finally had to walk away from it because he knew it was a futile effort. So.
Oh, yes.
Good for men like Howard Phillips and good for men like Eustace Mullins. When we come back, though, from the break, Eustace, I want to invite you to tell us a little bit about your book, The Curse of Canaan, and I guess its mate, World Order, by you. And I'd like to be able to have you explain to our listeners about the interesting line of the Illuminati through the millennium and where Cain comes from, the descendants of Cain, in your view, and also what you see as today as
well,
the control of the
world. We just had a state government election in Virginia,
mm-hmm.
and we elected Mr. Cain as our governor.
Mm-hmm.
The governor of Virginia today is the Governor Cain.
Mm-hmm.
K-A-I-N-E.
Right. Exactly. Very interesting.
But I always spell it C-A-I-N.
And we've got John McCain, Senator, son of the devil. Huh?
Oh, God. He's right in there.
Yep, that's what the name is. All right. We will be back with Eustace Mullins. Stay there, Eustace. We'll invite callers to join aboard and enjoy questions or comments because Eustace has a lot to say, as you know. I'm Rick Adams. We'll be back.
Get back at 'em with Rick Adams, the Radio Avenger on the Republic Broadcasting Network.
That's right. You can do that by dialing in 800-313-9443. And Rick Adams with Eustace Mullins. And Eustace, this book that you wrote, how many years ago did you write this book about Cain?
1968.
Wow. Wasn't too long ago.
The subtitle of it is The Study of Demonology and History. It's the only book on demonology that I know of.
Demonology and history.
Yeah, because the presence, the thing that struck me in my study of world history was the omnipresence of demonic presences in world history.
Mm-hmm.
And they've been there all along.
Of course. They've been there before the foundation of the world and before the creation of mankind. So we've had the spirit world, the world that was before this world, the flesh world, and of course the spirits are still quite active,
active
in the hearts and minds of certain politicians, leaders, kings and princes all through the ages, haven't they been?
They really have. And the politicians know a lot more about demonology than the American people do.
Now, when you wrote the book, did you talk specifically, because I haven't had a chance to read it, but about the Illuminists and the Illuminati?
Oh, it's a complete history of the Illuminati movement.
Mm-hmm.
See, that all started in Babylon, and that's why the American troops are in Baghdad today.
Mm-hmm.
That's Babylon.
Mm-hmm. Right.
No, this is repeating history.
Mm-hmm.
Which Americans are apt to do without ever knowing what's going on.
Now, you had talked in your book, because others have commented on it, and others have misinterpreted what you've said. Others apparently have gone off at their own theories about the tribes of Israel, and Dan in particular being used as a Judas Iscariot-type seed, and the descendants today having to do with the British Isles and so forth, but you were dealing in your book with the whole concept of the Cainites and who were the Cainites then and now.
I was the only one to do it.
Tell us about that. Tell us specifically.
I found out that the Cainites disappeared mm-hmm. in the 12th century B.C.
Mm-hmm.
And for years I went through encyclopedias and couldn't find it. And finally I found in a very good mm-hmm. British encyclopedia called Chambers Encyclopedia.
Mm-hmm.
And they said that in the 12th century B.C., the Canaanites changed their name and became the Phoenicians.
Mm-hmm.
So the Phoenicians were the Canaanites, and later on they became the Venetians,
mm-hmm.
the greatest tradesmen in the whole Mediterranean Empire.
Mm-hmm. And do you feel that the Canaanites were intertwined with what we know as the Kenites? The Kenites with a K,
oh,
not
yes.
a C.
That's exactly right.
Okay. And you talk about, you know, Mystery Babylon, and you talk about what is this Mystery Babylon. And then, you know, you get into the whole Illuminati business going through the last, well,
oh,
the last whole millennium.
Oh, it's a complete tracing of the early start of mm-hmm. the Illuminati movement. Now, you know, it started with Nimrod at Babylon.
Mm-hmm.
He was the world's first dictator.
Do you feel the British royal family have been part of this Kenite movement?
Oh, very definitely. See,
yeah.
they married in with the European people,
mm-hmm.
Some European people that were related to the Canaanites,
mm-hmm.
or descendants of the Canaanites.
Yes.
And this goes right through the British. That's why the British royal family is the only royal family that survived World War I because of its Canaanite origins.
Oh, that's interesting.
That's why they were spared.
Uh-huh.
You see, the Tsars, the Russian royal family, the Romanovs, and the Hohenzollerns and Habsburgs in Germany, and the Italian royal family,
mm-hmm.
they all disappeared.
Mm-hmm.
But the British royal family rolled right on as though nothing had happened.
Mm-hmm.
They were never touched.
You know, also, there have been various theories. I want to see what you think and what you say. As far as the, again, Europe is the center here, and these families that have been involved incestuously, if you will, with the tribes of Israel. It's very important, I think, to note that these people were to wrap themselves with the progeny of the tribes of Israel as they were dispersed from the Middle East throughout Europe. And what we find, you know, the houses that we know of, the house of Judah, and of course the house of, you know, of the men of Judah, as well as Levi, as well as Dan, as well as Manasseh, as well as Ephraim, and so on and so forth, that you have this intertwining, if you will.
Oh, there's been a lot of that.
Of the families, yeah.
Oh, yes.
Tell us a little bit about it. Tell us from your own knowledge. I'm curious about, like, Queen Elizabeth and Prince Charles and so forth. Mary Magdalene. They say that claim to be in the bloodline of Mary Magdalene. What do you think about all
that? Well, you see, Queen Victoria was of the Hanover line of Brunswick, Germany. And the Hanovers took over the British throne in 1720,
mm-hmm.
and the Hanovers absolutely didn't speak a word of English. The first three Georges,
uh-huh.
George I, George III, second George III, were Germans, and they spoke only German. They never
All
learned
right,
a word of English.
All right, hold that thought. We'll be right back with Eustace Mullins. I'm Rick Adams.
You're listening to the Republic Broadcasting Network, because you can handle the truth.
Okay, and we're back with Eustace Mullins, and Eustace is here with us for about another hour tonight, so if you want to ask a question, you want to get on the line, now's the time to do it. 800-313-9443. And Eustace, I had to cut you off in mid-sentence there, but go ahead. Get back to your thoughts. Hello?
Oh, hello.
Yes, Eustace.
Yeah.
Continue. Please continue.
Oh, well, I was talking about the royal families of Europe.
Yes.
And the fact that at the time of the World War One. In fact, all the royal families of Europe were closely related, and in fact, half of them, the wives, were daughters of Queen Victoria.
Mm-hmm.
And Queen Victoria was of the Hanover line of Germany,
mm-hmm.
and that's where Brunswick, Germany, is the Hanovers, is where the Illuminati originated.
Mm-hmm.
So actually, when the Hanovers took over the throne of England, England became a Illuminati country.
Mm-hmm.
And George IV's daughter, Victoria, married a minor German prince, Prince Saxe-Coburg-Gotha.
Mm-hmm.
And so he became the prince consort of the British queen. And they had a number of daughters. One of her daughters became, her name was Hesse. She's from the province of Hesse. And she married Tsar Alexander of Russia. So she became the Tsarina of Russia.
Mm-hmm.
And another daughter married the king of Greece. And she became the queen of Greece. And so one of Queen Victoria's nephews was Kaiser Wilhelm of Germany.
Yeah, yeah.
And
right.
so George V of England,
mm-hmm.
Victoria's son, George V of England and the Kaiser of Germany were first cousins.
Mm-hmm.
And so was Nicholas of Russia. So these were all the principal countries of Europe. They were all first cousins. So we have to wonder, why did all these first cousins go to war against each other in the First World War?
And the reason?
Well, there wasn't a family quarrel at all. There were no family differences whatsoever.
Mm-hmm.
The whole thing was set up by the Sixth Zionist Conference in Basel, Switzerland, mm-hmm. in 1896. And at this meeting, one of the speakers said, "I want to make a prediction. We're going to see a world war, and then we're going to see a second world war, and we're going to see a third world war, and at the end of the third world war, the world will be in our hands." And this, well, at the time that he made this speech in 1896, there had never been a world war.
Mm-hmm.
So people thought he was really deranged.
Mm-hmm.
But then in 1914, we had a world war. And in 1941, we had the Second World War. And then today, we're in the Third World War, which is a new crusade, a war between 1 billion Christians and 1 billion Muslims.
Mm-hmm.
And that's World War III. And Bill O'Reilly is the only person on television that talks about World War III except myself.
Mm-hmm.
And we are in World War III, and so we're going to see some startling developments. But because of this, World War III has been so flagrant that we went into Iraq and involved ourselves in Israel's war against the Arab countries,
mm-hmm.
that the Israelis now are planning to cut and run because they realize they're facing total destruction unless they get out of the Iraq war.
Well,
they're not in the Iraq war, but they put us into the Iraq war.
You see, Satan's kingdom is confused and divided, but not divided against itself. So
it's not divided against itself.
Right.
For its own self-preservation, mm-hmm. Israel realizes it's got to get out of World War III.
But it's not going to be spared World War III. In fact, it's not going to be spared the coming annihilation that will take place in prophecy now.
Oh, no, absolutely.
Yeah, here's the interesting thing. You talk about Iraq as, you know, through the ages, the has always been the same. You know, the Babylonian captivity, the nations of the regions of the Middle East, and, of course, right down to this present century today. Once again, that area of the world and the sons of Cain heavily involved in conquering it and controlling it. And so what we have today is very interesting, Eustace, with this war turning into all directions and becoming the source of, if anything, total disunity. Now, we believe that out of chaos is going to come order, so that part of this is according to the plan, you see? Eustace? We lost Eustace? Sounds like somebody from the Illuminati might have joined in, huh? All right, you try to get him again. And the British royal family are heavily involved in all of this. And some people are really doing some research. I don't know how accurate it is. You might be able to tell me, but some of you, about the satanic bloodline of some of those who are involved with the tribes. For instance, Dan, the tribe of Dan. which, of course, you know, we know the region of the world today where they are, and that really is the British Isles, we're told. So you might want to think about that and how what we have scripturally here, scripturally, is most interesting. Because what we're finding right from the beginning of scriptures is you have basically two kids fighting. You have Esau, or Edom, and you have Jacob. You have the children of Jacob, and you have the children of Esau. And who is who? Well, that's a question that we explore here on this program quite often, and we will continue to do so as long as we're here. Because this is most important to understanding biblical prophecy and why today the United States is involved in yet another war. All in the name of democracy. Remember, democracy started it for Woodrow Wilson. And, of course, it continued right through the other wars, right to the present. So this democracy word is the word that's being used to bring about a new world order. So what do you think? Eustace is bringing up some interesting stuff about the cutting and running and who's going to be doing it. But what is the real goalpost? What is the real game plan here? Is it merely tactical or is it legitimate? Well, within Israel, of course, there's this big debate today about the direction into which they're going. You know, they say that if Israel did not have so many enemies, external enemies, they'd be fighting and killing off each other. And that is the nature of the beast which we're dealing with. But George Bush has pronounced his goals. He has pronounced his propaganda once again about Iraq and how we are winning, how we have an election coming up, and how the United States cannot cut and run. And just a few more months, and we'll see the, quote, kind of stability needed to be able to withdraw troops. Now, you and I and the educated amongst us know that that's not what George Bush or this government and those that control it have in mind. Clearly, there is an intent continue the wars in the Middle East, to continue to go through to Syria next. They made no mistake, no bones about that, that that's their intention. And if they have their way, of course, it's going to be a very, very bloody, bloody conflict to come. Now, I believe that these things have to happen. I think they're going to happen, whether we like it or not, because the role players are playing out their roles in Scripture. And what we're seeing, again, is these two kids fighting, the seed line of Abraham, from Adam to Abraham, Jacob, and, of course, the seed line of Cain and the Cainites today at war with each other, though interspersed together. All right, you're back, Eustace.
Yes, I'm here.
What happened to you?
We were cut off. This happens. It hasn't happened for a few months, but by gosh, it sure happened this time.
Well, they're listening, brother. They're listening. You're getting them riled up, Eustace.
Well, I'm talking about basic things. I'm getting down to brass tacks.
Yeah, but this, I mean, we're giving just a brief thumbnail sketch here tonight of the history of the Illuminati, the history of the secret society.
This is the history of the world.
We haven't even, so I was just saying, we haven't gotten into all of the nuances. I think it's very, very interesting, but very intricate, very complicated, because you have to sit down and do a tremendous amount of research. And when you sat down and wrote your book about Cain, The Curse of Cain, where did you do your research?
Oh, I did my research in the Library of Congress, mostly among very ancient books. And by the way, in my explanation of the start of the World War, I was saying before we were cut off that all of the countries involved were all first cousins.
Mm-hmm.
So there was no reason why any of these countries would attack each other. And yet they became involved in a World War. And in this study of the Curse of Canaan, I found out that the Illuminati staged every one of the incidents which led to the First World War.
Yes.
And that's detailed in there and documented throughout the book.
Mm-hmm. Fascinating history.
Well,
today we haven't seen anything really but a change of names to protect the guilty, right?
Oh, absolutely. The modus operandi has continued right down the line. It's worked in 1914 and it's working now.
And when we talked about the 18th century, and we talk about the Rothschild family, the Warburg family, and so forth, and these Illuminists, these Illuminati people, they, as you know, died off, but their progeny continue right to this very day to control the banking system.
They're very influential.
Mm-hmm.
They have entree to the capitals of all the world. We call them Eurotrash nowadays because they're so wealthy and they don't work. And you see them in the capitals of Europe. With unlimited money, they live like kings.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Some of them have run afoul. I don't know how much you have recalled from memory, but we had some descendants in this era that we live in today wind up getting killed and wind up getting a Mossad hit, you know?
Oh, yes, that's happened.
I think of some of the people involved. You know, we had Gordon Thomas, and he and his co-author, who wrote a book having to do with one of the Maxwells. Remember?
Robert Maxwell. Oh, he was the Mossad up to his ears.
He was assassinated by the Mossad. And the reason was, of course, he was starting to get too loose-mouthed. He was starting to get too boastful, and then, of course, he was apparently ripping off people in their pension plans with his company, too. But he was becoming a loose cannon.
Well, he was always a loose cannon. You know, he was a Hungarian peasant, mm-hmm. and he came to England and passed himself off as a British aristocracy.
Mm-hmm.
And then he built his empire, which is the Mossad operation.
Yeah.
And
turned against him, though, huh?
Yeah. And he was a loose cannon. He was never; they were never able to control him.
Right.
He talked
right.
all the time.
Yeah. Yeah.
In fact, good. There's a couple of biographies about him which I haven't read because there's so much information in that I'm not even interested in.
That's right. But you have done a tremendous amount of research yourself, and what you've come up with, I find fascinating. How many books totally have you written now?
15. I've got 38 more to do.
You said the last time we talked you were working on 30 books.
38, that's right. I've got the material for 38 mm-hmm. books. I'll probably mm-hmm. do more than that if I keep going that long.
Well, how long will these books be, you think, about?
About 300 pages each.
Wow.
Yeah. No, see, I write all first draft. All my books are written. I never change a comma or a word once I write them. Because, you see, I carry the book. It's sort of like pregnancy. You carry the book within you until it's mature, and then you deliver it.
Mm-hmm.
And so writing and rewriting does enter into the picture.
Mm-hmm.
Because the book comes out fully formed, the information is all there, it's all organized,
mm-hmm.
and you can read it right through, and that's the only way to write. People tell me I have a very fluent writing style.
Yes.
The fact is, it's not fluent at all. I'm just giving information.
No, but you have a flow, though, that's very easy to read.
The flow is there, that's what counts.
Yeah, your books are always hard to put down once you start picking them up. And, you know, I know you've written many of them from the 1950s right up to the present. So you are indeed a man with a purpose, and God has given you that prolific purpose. And
well, he really has.
Amen.
I met Ezra Pound, and he taught me how to do this. I could never have done this. I'm just a hillbilly kid from the Valley of Virginia. How would I know how to write national history books?
Well, here you are. Here you are.
Certainly.
Can any good thing come out of Nazareth, they said, you know?
Well, you know, my books, actually, I hardly dare pick one up because if I start reading it, I'll read 50 or 100 pages.
Mm-hmm.
And so I don't have time to even open them.
right, exactly. All right, we're going to take some calls, and we'll start now, and then we'll continue after the break because here's a man that I know is very much into biblical study in biblical archaeology and tribal entities, and that's Joe. Hello, Joe. Hello, Joe.
Hi, Rick.
Hello.
Can you hear me?
I can hear you now, sir.
Okay.
Eustace, can you hear Joe?
Oh, yes, I can hear him fine.
All right. Go ahead. Joe, what do you think of all this we're talking about? Very interesting, huh?
Yes, I really enjoy this particular subject, and I'd just like to throw my two mites in, if
mm-hmm.
I could.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
The German folks stories, or what is known as fairy tales, when I was a child in this country in the 50s, I used to read all the German folk tales.
Mm-hmm.
And my parents used to get me the books, and we even had them in school. One of the books was Little Red Riding Hood.
Oh, yeah.
You know, Little Red Riding Hood was a book written by the Germans in the Black Forest of Germany. They were biblical stories that were put in, how can I say, in code, or they were put into language that the children could understand.
Mm. Mm.
But they were biblical stories that the Germans used to teach their children without anybody else knowing that they were biblical stories. And Little Red Riding Hood was very interested in the fact that when Little Red Riding Hood left the breadcrumbs, when she went to Grandma's house.
Mm-hmm.
All
right, hold that thought, because we got to take a break, okay? I want you to do it uninterrupted about German folklore and specifically what the meaning is here and what you're trying to relate, because I think I understand exactly what you're saying, and I want to see if I can get it clear. We'll have plenty of time after the break, and the number here, by the way, if you got a quick comment or question for Eustace Mullen on any subject, you call us toll-free at 800-313-9443. 800-313-9443. There is an available line, and we will return in just about 3 minutes with more of Uncensored Radio Free America with Rick Adams, Radio Avenger. Stay tuned.
Adams is back. Live, uncensored, Radio Free America continues on the Republic Broadcasting Network.
Okay, we're back now. Joe in Rhode Island is on with Eustace Mullins. And Joe, go ahead. You were just talking about the German folklore and the tales, and this Little Red Riding Hood was one that you mentioned, right?
Yes, she was going to Grandma's house.
Mm-hmm.
Before she got there, the wolf beat her there.
Yeah.
And put on Grandma's clothing and got into bed.
Sounds like George Bush.
She was bringing the food to the grandmother, the nourishment. And, of course, there's a lot of scriptural and religious meaning here, if you can read between the lines. Also,
yes.
Another one was Hansel and Gretel. They were going into the woods. And they wanted to leave the breadcrumbs so that they could find their way back, like the lost tribes of Israel. They wanted to leave markers so that they could find their way back. And those markers were in the Bibles of the churches that were destroyed in the Crusades. And that was the reason, I believe, for the Crusades, to destroy the breadcrumbs, the trail back to the Middle East from where they came.
Hmm. Oh, that's interesting, yeah, yeah.
So these are the stories that were taught to the children, and they were brought to this country, and they were made famous in this country, all over the country in the 50s, and taught in the schools. And so this is something that's very interesting. Also, the tribes, for example, Denmark, for the most part, would be Dan. The Dardanelles. They left their ensigns or flags or names on the riverways. The riverways were the highways in those days.
Oh, like the Danube and so forth?
The Danube,
yeah.
Yes. That
yeah.
was their marker.
I see.
There are many in Ireland, Dan, the tribe of Dan.
Right.
Dan in the Hebrew would be Don or Donahue or...
Donegal, yeah.
McDonough.
Donegal, yeah. Yep.
Yes, and Mick and Max were the son ofs in the Old English. And you've got Germany was called by the Romans Germanus, the genuine.
Mm.
Evidently, the Romans knew that there was a fake. You've got the Finnish, the Scottish.
Mm-hmm.
Scotland was named after Skoda. Who was of the king line of the Milesian kings, and the hills of Tara where the coronation chair was before it went to Scotland and England, and that's where all the kings of Ireland were crowned before the chair went to Scotland, and then from Scotland to England, and now it's just given back to Scotland. These are all the tribes, the Ten Lost Tribes, the Anglo-Saxon tribes, and in the Gaelic tongue, the word Saxon means Isaac's sons, literally. So, you know, it's, however, to tie the Kenites in with them, in the book of Genesis, chapter 4, you get a big, long listing of the sons of Cain, and you never see Cain listed in Adam's genealogy, yet the genealogies of Adam are listed, and they're both Hebrew names.
Yes,
and
yes.
They're very similar in names, too, if you notice that.
Well, when I was mentioning this, the two children, Billy, really, it comes down to that simplicity, doesn't it, this whole war that's coming here?
What's that, Rick?
The war that is upon us now is really a war that is culminating in the battle between two kids.
That's exactly what it is.
Stay where you are, gentlemen, okay? Eustace Mullins, Joe, I find this fascinating. We'll be right back in the second hour to continue. I'm Rick Adams.
Censored. Radio Free America. Another exciting, informative hour is warming up. Rick Adams is on fire.
Well, we are on fire, and we're talking with Eustace Mullins and Joe. So far, Eustace, you haven't said very much in this last couple of minutes. You've been following everything Joe's been saying here?
Oh, yes, indeed. This is fascinating. You know, yeah. I grew up on those, though. When I was a teenager, or 12 years old, I guess, they had a whole series of fairy tales. They had the black fairy tale book and the gold and the green and so forth, about eight of them, all different colors. And they were the most fascinating things I've read in my life. And children who are not getting that education from those fairy tales, really, that's the way they educated their children those days.
Well, we have to learn about Martin Luther King, you know. That's more important, you see.
Well, heroes like Christopher Reeve and Martin Luther the King.
But, you know, even the German leader, the songs, if you will, you're familiar with them, I'm sure, both of you.
Oh, yes, indeed. Hansel and Gretel, has been many songs written about Hansel and Gretel.
But they tell a story. They tell a story in the song. They're not just meaningless, childish, superfluous lyrics.
No, there's nothing
lyrics.
Childish about them. Right. These are the most educational things a child could hear.
And is there a reason for that in your view, Joe? Joe, you're on the line. Are you saying there's more than meets the ear here?
Oh, yes, Rick. For those that are meant to hear these stories and understand them, there is definitely a recollection or a recalling by the Heavenly Father to certain knowledge in all generations. He will encode and hide his truth. I call it the hidden manner of the book of Revelation. There's manna, and then there's hidden manna. Manna's food, or spiritual food for understanding, and then there's hidden manna. For those that should understand the deeper truths, then they have a job to do. Not that they're anything special, but they have a little extra special job to do that they were chosen for. Not that it makes them any better than anyone else, but just that they have a special project that he wants them to fulfill. And
That's very fascinating. You know, you're talking here very deep about the mysteries, if you will. You know, that in the Scripture, it refers to the mysteries of iniquity doth already exist, as you recall.
Right.
And you know what those mysteries, some of those mysteries are. Not really mysterious to the believers, but they can be mysterious in other ways, huh?
Right. Yes.
For the uninitiated, those who don't understand, the whole world comes down to spiritual warfare. Demons, yeah. And of course, our guest, Eustace, mentioned demons literally running the world system. You know, you look at the Bush administration, you look at the predecessor, Bill Clinton, it doesn't matter. It isn't a dime's worth of difference between them insofar as looking at the personage, the faces, the names of the people who were involved in each of these administrations are the same clique, essentially, that's been running the country for the last century.
Oh, yeah, from 1900, right straight through.
Yeah. I mean, families, their progeny, and their kindred are running these governments of the world. So, Joe, thank you for calling. I appreciate it.
You,
yeah?
You even had King David, who had a son.
Right.
Whose name was Absalom.
Uh-huh.
Name means father of peace.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
He was nothing but a thorn in the side of David.
Mm-hmm.
He actually wanted to take his father's place.
Yeah.
And,
yep.
You know, he a type of he was a type. I don't know if you know what I mean by a type.
Yeah. Yep. Yep.
A type of a prophetic type of a father of peace that's going to be coming soon.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. The false Christ. Yeah. Excellent. All right, Joe. Thanks for your great input. Appreciate it. All right. Going to take a break now. We'll be back with other callers at 800-313-9443. Eustace Mullins, our prolific author guest tonight, with us for a bit more. So get on the line now if you want to get through. I'm Rick Adams, Radio Avenger. We'll be back.
Don't feel like the Lone Ranger. You've got the Radio Avenger on your side.
Hey, Rick Adams is on. Hey, turn your horse radio on. Rick Adams is on.
Ouch. All right, gentlemen, cattlemen, cowboys, we're back. And with us, Eustace Mullins and... We're going to go right back to the phone, Eustace, if you'd like to. You want to win this?
That sounds fine.
Okay, go ahead. We'll take Charles in California next, then. Charlie, you're on the program.
Hi. I'm a new listener, and it's a real honor to talk to you, both of you.
Thank you. The honor is mine and Eustace.
Well, I've read some things Eustace has done, and I really respect him. He's a true American patriot.
Mm-hmm.
So are you, Rick.
Well, thank you. I appreciate that. I try.
Eustace, you said something earlier in the show, which I couldn't hear, but you said Israel was in for something in the next 30 days or something?
Oh, I said that we're breaking free of Israel in the next 2 months.
Really?
Yeah, see, the state of Israel realizes that it's at the point of its own destruction. And for their own protection, they've got to pull out of World War III and against the... Muslim world, and we have to get out with them.
I have heard Tex Mars say on one of his broadcasts that America will turn against Israel in the last.
Well, that's exactly what is. I've been thinking about that for the past 3 weeks. I didn't know Tex had said that, but I'm very glad he did because he and I are in total agreement.
Yeah, he said that, I don't know, a long time ago. He said in the end, U.S. will turn against Israel. I was wondering, why is it that is all these things seem to be going along with biblical prophecy?
This is biblical prophecy. There's no question.
Mm-hmm.
We're not destined to be destroyed by Israel. It's absolutely not in the cards at all. And we're finally going to wake up and avoid our own destruction.
That would be good if we did. What's the deal with when we... I've been listening to the RBN today all day, and they were saying that China and Russia might blast us if we attack Iran, but isn't China and Russia in the New World Order, too, the system?
Oh, of course they are.
Mm-hmm. So why would they blast us if we're all...
Oh, they wouldn't blast us at all. They bring up boogeymen like this all the time, like the bird flu is going to wipe out 90 million people in the next couple of days, and now they've got so much anti-flu vaccine stock that today's paper said they'll probably never get rid of it.
Well, I'll never take it, that's for sure.
Well, I'm not taking
it. Good for you, Charles. Well, we got to move along, Charlie.
Okay.
I appreciate your first-time call and continue to join in and listen
to
every night.
I'm a new listener to Republic. And
how are you listening to us?
I listen on the Internet.
Good. Very
I've listened
good.
I've listened to all the other networks, and I'm really in love with Republic, the best of
it
all.
It is the best network, and we'll tell you a little bit more about that in the next part of the program. So stay with us, okay?
I will.
Thank you.
Okay, bye-bye.
All right, thank you. Let's move along. Tom in Colorado, you're on the program now. Hi, Tom.
Oh, I read a couple of Eustace Mullins' books,
mm-hmm.
and I really enjoyed the books. I'm glad he's a guest. I haven't seen him around. I wish he'd get his own show. He has a lot to say. You know, we get all these piddly people on who don't have much to say. I mean, like Rush Limbaugh, he just wastes everybody's time and never has anything that's worth listening.
Well, Rush Limbaugh won't let anybody talk on his show. He says you cannot talk if you're a tax protester. You cannot mention the Council on Foreign Relations.
Mm-hmm.
And he has all of these prohibitions against the callers.
Right.
Well, that's why he's on the air, because he doesn't have much to say.
Well,
that's
exactly
the whole point.
And it's a pity that you listen to this radio and none of them are any good. I mean,
no,
Eustace would be a good
host.
I
have never heard his show, frankly.
If we could get him in somewhere, it would be great. But anyways, I wanted to ask about, I'm into the idea of monetary reform. This Ezra Pound was into that idea. I think Huey Long, the
assassinated
senator.
Oh, yeah, social credit. Ezra Pound is a great advocate of social credit.
Yeah, and Huey Long, too, was into
Huey Long said, every man a king.
Mm-hmm. Right, and his idea now, wasn't it, was he was just going to take the gross domestic product that applied to consumerism, like housing, clothing, food, transportation, the yearly output of the USA, divided up by the amount of people, and just give the people that much money each?
Absolutely. That's what the resources of a country are for.
Right, and you know, it's amazing that you have to go back that far to get anybody who has any sense of...
And what happened to Huey Long, gentlemen?
He was assassinated.
he was assassinated.
Showed he was going to beat Roosevelt, he assassinated him.
Mm-hmm. Well, in 1936, Roosevelt's advisors told him he could not be elected to a second term because of Huey Long. And that's why he had him assassinated.
Right, and it's a shame to have to go back that far to get a politician in the United States that has anything to say on the economy of any importance. It's all the way back to Huey Long 70 years ago before he can get anybody who even has anything to say. None of these politicians ever have anything to say.
You can go back then and even before then, but you think of great men like Charlie Lindbergh and his flight across the Atlantic was, I mean, I could never imagine having the courage to do what that man did.
Well, that's courage, but you see, a greater man was Charles Lindbergh's father, Charles Augustus Lindbergh Sr.
Yes.
He fought
the
Federal Reserve System.
He fought
and he was run out of Congress,
and
his political life was destroyed because of that sacrifice.
It's amazing. It's amazing. What you're hearing today is absolutely true.
Yeah,
and Charlie Lindbergh, last night we had on Tom Kimmel, the grandson of Admiral Kimmel, talking about the fraud of Pearl Harbor.
Admiral Kimmel, he's a wonderful person.
And, of course, Charles Lindbergh was one of those who knew the evil that World War II would bring about.
He knew it firsthand. He was a very famous lawyer, by the way. Yeah. He was a very wealthy lawyer. He represented Weyerhaeuser Lumber and some of the biggest corporations in the country.
And he foresaw what would happen if the United States entered the war on the side of the Soviet Union. He knew the slavery was coming, the biggest slavery in the history of Europe.
Well, the Soviet regime was killing 1 million Russian Christians a year from 1917 to 1987.
Mm-hmm.
70 years.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Go ahead. I didn't mean to interrupt the caller.
Well, I remember Ross Perot, when he was candidate for office, they asked him about the Mexican problem. He's from Texas, and he said that, well, they have 1% of the people in Mexico controlling 90% of the wealth. And I was astounded he said that, you know, because it shows how easy it would be just to turn that whole scene around down there.
You know, certainly.
Just get rid of these, moving this 1% aside, have an act monetary reform, boom, the whole problem solved for Mexico. But then we never heard another word from Ross Perot after that. He never made it on the TV. No more.
I never heard him say it at that time or any time since.
Well, he was threatened, and he knew what was going to happen if he continued. So we know that story. That's true. Thank you, Tom. I got to move along, though. Good to hear from you.
Thank you.
All right. Let's move along to Wayne in Nebraska. Wayne, you're on the program with Eustace Mullins.
Hi, Eustace. I wanted to touch on the Kenite thing you talked about. You got to go clear back to the Garden of Eden and the sin that occurred there.
Mm.
And the one caller said, I believe Joe, his name was.
Uh-huh.
Cain was not of Adam's genealogy. Cain was actually the son of the devil,
mm-hmm.
because the devil was the knowledge of the good and evil, the tree of the knowledge of good and evil. So both her and Adam partook of the devil, and then Cain went on to the sixth-day creation of God. That's where the Kenites come from.
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And I want to touch on one other thing. I hear so many people talk about this mark that we're going to take and all this and all that. It isn't true. The mark was put on Cain when he slew righteous Abel.
Right, right.
And the 666 is stones rolled smooth over a long period of time. Therefore, that's all these people, these kings and stuff that you're talking about that take that mark. Mm-hmm. They're bringing this whole thing about.
But it's the mark of Cain.
It's the mark of Cain, yes.
Right, exactly. That's the mark of the beast we're talking about.
Yes, it isn't a computer chip or a barcode. You know.
No, you know, I used to believe that, but now I can see exactly what's happening here. It's much more than that. It's in the mind.
Yes,
it's
sir.
Not on the mind, but
in the mind, in the
heart.
Right, yes,
right.
Yes, sir.
Well, you have to accept that lie in order to be part of that deception. If you don't accept it, you will not be part of the condemnation.
Well, Rick, if they tattooed sixes all over you, how would that deceive you?
No way.
Put a barcode on you or chip you or whatever they do want to do.
Right.
So that's where a lot of people get off. You know, I mean, sure. I mean, I hear other talk shows talk about that, but that's basically the truth.
Now,
as far as the United States is concerned, I believe in the book of Ezekiel, it talks about another battle called Haman Gog, for which we bought Alaska for the, they're burying where God's going to wipe out the Russian army or China army. I'm not real sure.
Yeah, there is something there about Alaska. Alaska Purchase, yeah.
Yeah, and Russia is north of us. So, you know, that's
gods of the north, huh?
Yes, sir.
It is interesting. Very intriguing to know the codes of the Bible and to try to decipher them. And it's very simple for some, I think, who know what they're speaking about. I don't claim to be an expert on everything, but I have learned in the last 2 years more than I knew in the previous 20. I will say that.
Yes, sir.
All right, Wayne, anything else?
One other thing I wanted to say to people is this, okay? It's in Matthew, Mark, and Luke, and Christ addressed this to us. He says, don't let any man deceive you in my name, that'd be Christian, the day that's coming is the falling away. And we have to be alert, like what you're doing there, you folks, and know that we're not home until we actually get in a spiritual body. So we're here to witness, like the one caller said, and not witnessing, not letting that Holy Spirit speak through us is actually the unforgivable sin.
Hmm. Well, denying him, yeah.
Yes,
denying
Luke's gospel.
Yeah. Yeah, the right. Okay, Dwayne, thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Any comment, Eustace?
Well, I'd like to add to Matthew 29. Mm-hmm. Christ says, I am with you always. ALLWAYS.
Amen.
That Christ is with you. You don't have to wait for his second coming.
He's within you.
I feel that Christ has supported me in my work.
Okay, we've got to take a break.
Alone.
We'll be right back. Thank you. Yes, Eustace, the book of Matthew, the Gospels, and certainly has been good to you in your, 83 years now?
83 years.
Wow.
It's been so good to me that I can't believe it. Every day I just marvel at it.
Uh-huh. And anyway, what I wanted to do is mention before we run out of time in the next 6 minutes or so, we have three callers we're going to go to, but you have people want to contact you. By email, they can do so at EustaceMullins.com, I believe, right?
Oh, that's correct, yes.
And then if they wish to write to you personally, you do have a street address, I guess they can write to?
Yes, it's 126 Madison Place. That's named after President James Madison. And it's Stanton, Virginia, 24401.
Right.
And I'll welcome any correspondence whatsoever.
And you've been getting a lot. All right, let's go to the phones and take John in New York first. Hi, John.
Gentlemen, good evening.
Yes.
I am so delighted to catch your show this evening. Eustace, I have a couple friends here, the Pickering brothers in New York, where I'm calling from, and I understand they're friends of yours.
I do have a lot of friends.
Okay, Sean Pickering and...
Oh, Sean, yes, indeed.
Yes,
yeah, they're wonderful people.
Absolutely. You know what? We are living at the epicenter in New York. It's the center of Zog environment.
Oh, this is a wonderful time, and people don't know it. They don't realize where they are.
Oh, my God. You know, listen.
December is a time of ecstasy. I'm absolutely high all the month of December because I feel the benevolent price, the benevolent presence of Jesus.
Mm-hmm.
And only in December do we have this. And, you know, my mother was born on Christmas Day, and so I think I have some heritage from that through her because the ecstasy that I go into in December is absolutely unbelievable.
Well, you're right, and I don't want to take up a lot of your time, but you know what? Why is it acceptable to talk about the Mexicans or talk about the Germans? I mean, crucify the Germans, talk about the Irish against the English, talk about every single race under the sun except the Jews.
Yes, you can't mention the Jews.
Why in God's name? I mean, he said it in John 4, you know? These people, the spawn of Satan.
He says your father's the devil.
He is the devil. And
well,
you know what? They are occupying every single critical position within the government, and they always get somebody they put up as a figurehead. You know, you mentioned Charles Lindbergh before.
Mm.
Yeah, they stole the kid as a reminder. These people, until we address this issue, and I know you wrote the book about the Federal Reserve, and I've read it. We have to do something. The white Christian people have to do something.
We have to
do something. The Germans were the only one who stood up, got rid of the damn banks, got rid of their usury, stopped their dependency on oil by mm-hmm. developing synthetic oil.
Yeah,
we developed music, chemistry, medicine. We have so much to be proud of. But yet, through their damn control media,
remember,
they want us to feel guilty and
lonely. John, it's all coming down to the wire, and these Kenites and the sons of Jacob will have their meeting. And it won't be a pleasant one, but the Kenites will not survive the end as a people, as a race. Okay,
no,
thanks for
too long already.
Thanks for your thanks for your call,
John. Going off, guys.
I'm
going
really, to
God bless you.
Thank you. We're going to try to squeeze in two more quick calls. Jeff in New Mexico and Dan. Jeff, hello.
Hello.
Yes. You're on the air.
It appears you, Eustace Mullins, have great knowledge of who are the ultra-wealthy power abusers in the world. So what would be your opinion of reinstatement of inheritance tax on inheritances over $250,000 in value in the United States? The bigger amount above $250,000, the bigger the tax percentage.
Okay, Eustace, what's your opinion on that?
Well, every generation must make its contribution. Now, I was with H.L. Hunt, the richest man in the world, for some time, and he had five sons, and when they became 21 years old, he gave them each $100 million, and that was in 1959. That's the equivalent of $1 billion today. So all of his sons, all of his children, were billionaires, and they didn't turn out very well.
So what's your answer? Are you in favor of that inheritance tax or not on that level?
I am not in favor of it because I believe that a man should be able to leave what he earns. He should be able to leave that to his children.
Right. I would agree with that. Jeff?
But the communists say if you don't work, you don't eat. So
well,
how
the Bible says that.
So how can you be for things like workman's compensation without being called a socialist, liberal, communist? Because the ultra-conservatives would always say people are always faking work injuries to get workman's comp and avoid work.
Well, if you realize that we are feeding the entire world, and none of these people work, so we're violating our own precepts.
Okay, thank you, Jeff. Dan in Michigan, you'll have the last word for 20 seconds.
Hi, I was just questioning what was said about the the mark of the beast thing, and then Revelation says that you won't be able to buy or sell without it, and it seems like you were explaining it almost as something figurative, and I was wondering.
No, it's not figurative. It's in the heart, but it's something that will be universal, I believe. Eustace, we're out of time, though. Thank you, Dan. We'll pick up on this next time, okay? Eustace, thank you for being my guest. We got a break. We have another guest, Republic Trading, and it's a pleasure. We'll talk to you before Christmas.
Oh, very good.
God bless you now.
Right on.
Bye-bye. We'll be back. Rick Adams, stay tuned.